Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
How can 100 seconds a day improve your mental toughness? Hello everyone, Kevin Cruz here, and in just a minute, we're going to talk about how to train your mind for elite level performance. But first, congratulations on being a lifelong learner and being proactive with your career. You're turning on the LeadX Show as you tie your sneakers and head out for your morning jog, or maybe you're turning on LeadX when you turn on your car and go on your morning commute. Either way, when you listen, you know LeadX is helping you to stand out and get ahead. Tell your friends at work, LeadX is the smartest way to start your day. Today's 1 minute career tip is the 10-5 rule. This is used all the time in hotels, hospitality industry, at least the good hotels. And the 10-5 rule says if someone is approaching you in the hallway, they get within 10 feet of you, you want to smile and make eye contact. And if they get within 5 feet of you, you actually say good morning or hello. And so you can use this principle at work as you walk through the hallways. Now, why is this so important? Well, a lot of executive coaches will tell you that when people are critical of their boss, you know, they'll say, oh, my boss is rude, or she doesn't care about me, or even know I exist. A lot of times it's because they're being ignored in public areas. And listen, all you type A drivers out there, that's me. And I used to think the same thing, like, I'm not being rude. I'm not ignoring you. I'm just busy trying to get to my next appointment. I'm thinking about my to-do list. And besides, I said good morning in the morning already. But the reality is, if you want to engage people at work, this little stuff counts. If you want to trigger that discretionary effort, you need to send these signals that you care about them, that they count. So smile and nod to those around you throughout the day. And if, you know, they're within earshot, say hello. The 10-5 rule. So before I introduce our guest today, one final big thanks to all of you who have subscribed on iTunes, left a 1 or 2 sentence review. It only takes a minute, but it's the best favor you can do for me. Our guest today is one of the premier performance coaches in the world. He served as the director of mental training for the St. Louis Cardinals and helped them win their first World Series in over 20 years. And in 2011, he assisted them in the historic feat of winning their second world championship in a 6-year period. He's also helped professional athletes in other sports, NFL, NHL, NBA, you name it. And he works with Fortune 500 executives to help them to reach their full potential. He's the author of several best-selling books, and his newest is Organize Tomorrow Today, 8 Ways to Retrain Your Mind. Our guest is Dr. Jason Selk. Jason, welcome to the show.
Kevin, thanks so much for having me. I like that 10-5 rule. I think I'm going to teach it to my kids tonight after school.
I love that. That's right. My kids get the downside. Whatever I've taught in the day, I end up teaching them at night, for better or for worse. So, Jason, we're going to talk about Organize Tomorrow Today in just a minute. But I always ask our guests the same first question, which is, will you share a time when you failed, maybe early in your career, and what did you learn from it? Because we want to learn from your failure, too.
Yeah, and really the one that sticks out to me, it was I was actually still in college and had the great opportunity. I was at the University of Iowa sitting in the sauna with the University of Iowa's very famous wrestling coach, Dan Gable, and some of his wrestlers. I had been fortunate enough to meet Coach Gable at an early age and stayed in touch with him. And he allowed me to watch a practice. And then I was sitting in the sauna. I was 20 years old at the time. And just some of the things that went on, watching how Coach Gable did things and interacted with these extremely high-level athletes, I had the realization for the first time while sitting in that sauna that I was a real excuse maker. You know, I was a complete underachiever at that point in my life. And a lot of it I was figuring out in those moments was really related to me and how I made excuses. I mean, I would in my mind or even out loud say I was going to do something, but the second it would become difficult, my pattern was I would just jump ship, you know, and then I would make an excuse so I wouldn't have to feel badly about myself. And it was never anything, you know, I wasn't screwing up badly enough that other people may have noticed, but there was no doubt I was never going to reach my potential in anything. And really that moment and those moments of asking myself, okay, if I keep living this way, you know, that I say I'm going to do something, even if it's in my own head, and then when it gets difficult, I just give myself a pass or a free out so that I don't have to feel bad about not getting it done, where am I going to end up? And I did for the first time something called life projection. I teach it now, but I just kind of naturally did it, that I forced myself to look 5-10 years into the future and get a really hard look at where Jason Self, the excuse maker, was going to be, you know. And for the first time, I forced myself to realize that the direction I was headed was not okay. It was not the life that I wanted. And frankly, I wasn't even sure I could handle where I was probably headed. And that was a really, really important moment in my life. And I wouldn't say by any stretch that since then I haven't made mistakes. That's not even remotely close to the point or the lesson that happened for me. It was, I just stopped making excuses that when I screw up, and I think I've really done a good job over the last 25 years since that day of when I screw up, I really work to not make excuses. Because if you make an excuse, that's what your mind focuses on. You know, we know that the way the mind works, it can only fully focus on one thing at a time. So the excuse essentially becomes a pacifier for the mind. That's what gets your focus. Instead of when you screw up, it's okay to experience negative emotion. And I knew this going through my studies in school, that negative emotion is not a curse. It's actually a gift. And you really can use it as a very powerful motivator. And I know since that moment, I have, and still to this day, use negative emotion as much as positive emotion to motivate me to make good decisions. But it really, for me, I think the biggest learning lesson from failure I had wasn't necessarily just one failure. It was a collective realization that this is how I've been dealing with failure. And it's a really bad way to deal with it, that it's okay to feel negative emotion. And then the key is that you just have to use the negative emotion to make positive behavior change. And it all starts with having that no excuse mentality.
So much good stuff there, Jason. And you really have a way with words, and I'm jotting down notes as I was listening. And I like the way you talk about, you know, excuses are pacifiers of the mind. That really resonates. And the idea that, you know, the negative emotions are not the curses, they're gifts, and it, you know, used correctly. And Jason, your book is, again, Organize Tomorrow Today, 8 Ways to Retrain Your Mind to Optimize Performance at Work and in Life. And, you know, it's a great book. I mentioned before we went on the air that not only did I love this book, it made me go back and buy your previous books. But rather than summarize, you know, the entire thing, this is a short format show, I want to dive into one particular area that really I think is powerful. And you write that the first time you ever went into the St. Louis Cardinal, you know, baseball clubhouse to talk to the players and the coaches, they only gave you 10 minutes. So you had to think about, what are you going to teach them in 10 minutes? How do you make the most impact in 10 minutes? So what did you pick to teach them? What did you talk about?
Well, and Kevin, you know, some people think it's a funny story. For me, it was not. I had for months been working with the front office with the Cardinals. And actually what I had been told is that I had a year contract where I was going to go down to Jupiter, Florida, spring training. And for a week, I was going to spend the first 2 hours of the day with the team, with the coaches, doing a presentation. And then I was going to be available throughout the day for individual attention. And then they were going to use me once spring training broke, about 20 hours a week working individually with players and coaches. Well, I got down there in the first day. Walt Jocketty walks me into Tony La Russa's office, and again, I'm prepared for a 2-hour presentation and then to be available, you know, 8 to 10 hours to work with the individuals. And Tony very quickly lets me know that I've got 10 minutes. And I started thinking about the contract.
Yeah.
And I knew that I had signed the contract. And I'm serious on this. I couldn't recall ever having seen the contract with their signature, because it didn't happen. They never did sign it. So I realized very quickly, okay, I don't have a job with the St. Louis Cardinals. I've got an interview.
Wow.
It's a 10-minute interview. And I told everybody back in St. Louis, everybody I could get to listen, that I was a new director of sports. Mm. So I was highly motivated to make that 10 minutes count. So what I did, the initial preparation was I was going to cover in a 2-hour period all 5 tools of the mental workout. Now, I walked in, and the first thing I thought I needed to do was probably get a hook. And so I said these words. I said, okay, originally I thought I had 2 hours. I've just been notified I have 10 minutes. What I was going to cover with you all is something called the mental workout. It's a 5-step process. I won't have time to cover all 5 steps, but I will have time to cover one. Now, the mental workout has been, since development, been scientifically proven to put you all in a position to play better baseball more consistently. Now, I thought if I said those words that I would get some people's attention.
Right.
Now, anytime you have science on your side, I think especially with elite performers, and you can show how the science of what you're going to provide them, teach them, give them is going to benefit them at a significant level, I think you have their attention, and then you just have to deliver. And so I just started in on the first tool, which is a centering breath, and it's a very simple tool for people to digest. And again, it's all science-based, so I knew that you couldn't formulate an intelligent argument about what I was saying that it wasn't true. It was a matter of, okay, were people going to go out and try it, or even just initially think, yeah, this makes sense, it's something good. So the centering breath is just it's a tool to deal with the normal reaction to performance, which most people don't understand, that when you go into a performance, and it doesn't have to have a bat and ball or a stage. I mean, anytime we're at work, that's a performance. You know, right. You make a call to a client, you have a meeting with the prospect, you have a interview with the boss, whatever it might be, those are all performances. And the normal reaction for human beings when we go into those environments is, we call it performance anxiety, but biologically, all that means is your heart rate elevates significantly. Now, the problem with that is that it sends a very clear message to your brain that it's going into fight or flight. Now, fight or flight, a lot of people have heard the language but don't know exactly how it works. It's a very simplistic method. It's so beautiful because it's simple, that what happens is when your brain experiences that performance anxiety or the elevation of the heart rate, it worries, and to protect itself, it disables all thought except fight this thing or flight, run from this thing.
Right.
Now it goes back to saber-toothed tiger days, and it really boils down to survival. Well, these days we're not going up against saber-toothed tigers, and losing the detailed thought, losing the ability to have detailed thought, is a very bad thing in performance, whether it be a baseball player trying to hit a 96-mile-an-hour fastball or a salesperson trying to allow the other person to realize the value in the product they're presenting. We need the brain to work. So the centering breath, what it does is, it's the biological tool that controls for the normal performance anxiety. And all you do is breathe in for 6 seconds, hold for 2, and breathe out for 7. We know that if we do that, if we take a centering breath before and even during performance, it will slow the heart rate, it'll control the heart rate, and this will allow the brain to remain in a very effective state so that it has the ability for detailed thought. Very important in all performance.
And Jason, this is great stuff. And it's reminding me of, I know a bunch of former and current Navy SEALs, and they've often talked to me about this, about things they do to, you know, sort of remain calm and focused in the middle of a very stressful situation. And it's often around, you know, controlling their breathing to control heart rate and everything else. But let me frame this out. So, because I teased the show, the 100 seconds, you know, for mental toughness. So, you know, you talk about this daily mental workout that can be done in as little as 100 seconds, you know, a couple of minutes. And I want us to walk through them. But as you said, it starts with the centering breath. Then you have what you call an identity statement. Then you do a personal highlight reel, identity statement, and then back to a centering breath. So we're starting with that centering breath, the breathe in for 6 seconds, hold for two, breathe out for seven, kind of gets us in the right state. And then the next step, though, is what you're calling an identity statement. So what do we do with that part?
Yeah, so let me just real quick explain the why behind the identity statement. Back in 1960, a fellow by the name of Maxwell Maltz writes a groundbreaking book, Psycho-Cybernetics. In that book, he identifies for the first time a concept known as self-image. Self-image, for our intents and purposes, Kevin's very, very similar to self-confidence. Now, we know self-confidence is the number one variable for impacting human performance. What Maltz identifies back in 1960 for the first time is that a person's self-image, again, think of it like self-confidence, a person's self-image is developed by how we talk to ourselves about ourselves over time. And we also know this, that a person will not outperform, nor will they underperform their self-image for long. So if I feel like I'm a career 275 hitter, once my batting average gets to 275, what subconsciously starts happening is I stop putting as much effort into the preparation, which then will start to cause maybe the 275 to go a little bit lower. Now, when the 275 goes a little bit lower, I realize, hey, look, I'm better than that. And so I start putting in a little bit extra work to bring me back up to the 275. It's very, very scientific. And when I first heard of this, I thought, wow, that just does not feel like it's science. But that was my inexperience and knowledge. If anything, self-image is understated. But again, what Maltz identifies, and it's completely proven, you cannot argue intelligently against this at this point, that a person's self-image is determined by how they talk to their self over time. Unfortunately, because of something called PCT, problem-centric thought, we have as humans a biological tendency to focus on the negative. It's completely normal. Right now, because of that and because of perfectionist tendencies and so forth, most people are out there talking to themselves about themselves in a very negative manner. And so if you think about that, what that means is most people then have a self-image much lower than what it could or should be. So what the identity statement, the second tool in the mental workout does, it's a proactive approach to really going to work on your self-image instead of allowing what is normal and natural to happen, which would be over time, you say things that are more negative about yourself than positive, which lowers your self-image. What we're going to do is we're going to be proactive on this. And what we're going to put together is a personal mantra that forces us to create a self-image where we want it to be. So, for example, when I first started in the field of sports psychology, and again, I was a complete nobody at the time, but I was saying to myself, I outworked the competition at the time. I am the most effective sports psychology consultant in the world. And Kevin, both parts, neither one of them were true. You know, again, I was just getting out of college, and so I didn't really have an established work ethic. And I was a nobody. You know, there was this story, I went to a YMCA and tried to give them what's now, you know, turned into 10-Minute Toughness, that mental training program I developed. I went to a YMCA and tried to give it to them for free, and they wouldn't even accept it for free. So clearly, I wasn't even the best in St. Louis, much less the state of Missouri or even the country, and we're not even talking about the world yet. So it wasn't true, but this is what we know with self-image. It's a whole lot more important to touch on and focus on your desire as opposed to your reality, right? And then another guideline you want to think about is you want to say it as if it's already been accomplished. And we'll give you one third guideline. You want to have two parts to it, a process focus, something that you can control. Really, for me, it was the outwork, the competition. I could control how hard I worked. And then the second part you want to have is a result focus, which was the I'm the most effective sports psychology consultant in the world. So I put all those things together. And then what happened, because I was doing my mental workouts at least once a day. I was saying to myself every single day, I outwork the competition every day. I'm the most effective sports psychology consultant in the world. At some point, Kevin, I don't know exactly when, but I started to believe it.
Right.
And then once I started to believe it, I think that's when my competition started hearing about me pretty quickly after that. Like the baseball player example, if I wasn't working hard, I felt this kind of stress and anxiety of, hey, you got to get going. And again, I used it to make positive behavior changes. I didn't sit there and let it overwhelm me. I used the negative emotion to make positive behavior changes. And then when I would, you know, like the example of going to the YMCA and them not even letting me give it to their clients for free, I mean, I was so embarrassed and so insulted. It really, again, just increased my work ethic. I knew that I had a decent platform in terms of the program. I knew the mental training plan was pretty solid. I had to work on my marketing skills. I had to work on how do I sell myself to people. And so I started putting energy into that. But again, the identity statement really helps develop the self-image, putting it at a level that you're proud of the performance instead of having it low, which is where most people are.
I love this stuff. And I want to get your reaction because I've had on this show and other conversations, people who talk about a personal mantra and things, but some people have suggested that with affirmations, if we're really saying something that isn't yet true or is really far out there, subconscious or unconsciously, our brain's gonna be like, no, you're not, you know, no, you don't have six pack abs. No, you're not a millionaire. You know, that it just isn't going to work if it's that far out. And I've seen a little bit of goal setting research that says, you know, it's tricky setting goals because if they're too low, well, then that's not motivating because that's just easy. It's just going to happen anyway. But if they're too far out there and your unconscious is like, you ain't never going to get there, that's also not motivating. So what do you think about that counter argument to this?
Yeah, so it's a really good point. And here's what we know. The research on affirmations, which, again, identity statement is positive self-talk. That's all affirmations really are. Affirmations say this, two things. Number one, the further from the truth, the more impactful they can be.
Wow. Okay,
so that's one thing. Now, the counterpoint to that is unless you can't even wrap your mind around it.
Ah.
Okay, so there's a very simple correction. All you do is you incrementally state the identity statement. So for example, if back in, I guess it'd be 1999 when I started with that identity statement, I am the most effective sports psychology consultant in the world. If my mind couldn't wrap around it, if I didn't believe that I had the ability to make that happen,
right?
Then yes, it's not going to work. And again, this is kind of with the affirmations, say the further from the truth, the more impactful, but you must be able to believe in it. Okay, so all I would suggest someone do right there is instead of saying best in the world, why don't we go back to St. Louis? Say, well, St. Louis feels a little too low, so how about we start with Missouri? I'm the most effective sports psychology consultant in Missouri. And then maybe 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18 months later, if you're starting to see some progress toward that goal, then maybe you take it to the region. And then maybe again, once you start to see, yeah, I think I can do this in the region, then you move it to the nation and then maybe the world. But I know for me, and maybe I'm a big dreamer and maybe it's not, but I know for me back then, I wanted it to be true so badly. I was willing to do the work and I wasn't naive about it. I knew that it wasn't going to happen just by sitting in my chair and saying positive things to myself. But those statements forced me to get up out of the chair, to get my butt to work earlier than what I felt like my competition was doing, and to stay later. And it was eventually that caused me to, I think, be in the at least in the ring for maybe the top sports psychology consultant in the world.
Yeah, and LeadX listeners out there, you know, what Jason just said is really important. I don't know if you picked up on it. He's not saying you wake up and you say your affirmations, I am a millionaire, and then you go back to sleep and magically you're going to become a millionaire. He's talking about using these identity statements, your personal mantra, as a regulator of emotion and action. He just said he had huge desire and knew he was going to put the work in. It still does take work.
You know, there are so many people out there that believe that if they just get a positive mindset, it's going to happen for them. And look, I think that that's a really good thing. I mean, I'm certainly a proponent of having a positive mindset. But you said something there. You said it's the positive mindset that promoted the action. See, it's the action. And that's why on that identity statement, you want to have two parts. Don't just say, I'm going to be or I am the most effective sports psychology consultant in the world. Don't forget the first part. I outwork the competition every day. And for me, I know that, I mean, I'm no dummy, but I also know that I'm not as smart as maybe some of the people IQ-wise that I'm going up against. So I wasn't going to be able to outsmart people. I know for me to get where I want to go, the characteristic that I really have to hang my hat on is I've got to outwork these individuals. I got to be more prepared. I got to do more studying. I got to be willing to dig in and spend more time with clients if that's what's necessary. But it was both parts, the action and the desire put together, that I think unleashed the real equation of success that for me has worked out. And I think for a lot of people, it helps work out as well.
Great stuff. And so, you know, in terms of this mental workout, we talked about starting with the centering breath, then, you know, saying your personal mantra. The next step is what you call the personal highlight reel. So what is that? And again, what's the why behind it too?
Yeah, so the personal highlight reel is visualization. And the why is visualization is known in sports psychology and performance psychology as the number one tool that people can use to prepare for success. So when I created the mental workout, I really wanted it to be as efficient as possible. I don't want people spending time on anything other than the most important tools. And the centering breath, the positive self-talk, and the visualization, those are your top three tools. Visualization is number one. And that's why of the 100 seconds, visualization gets 60 seconds of the pie. All right, now what I want people to do in the visualization is to take just 30 seconds and visualize over the last 24 hours, if possible. If you have to go back further than that, that's okay. But try to keep it more recent, the better, and be very specific. Just replay in your head two or three things you did well in the previous day. You know, it could be something from your personal life. I got up and spent some time with my wife and kids before going to work. It could be that you made good choices at the dinner table the night before. It could be in the professional life. You did a really nice job making the right calls to the right people that day. Could be that you, on the call, you followed a script that you had put together and you feel really good about it. It could be that you asked for the order, you know, whatever. But you want to see specifically the success you had, two or three of them, in the day before. Right, that's 30 seconds. And then after about 30 seconds, you want to take another 30 seconds and you want to imagine, okay, in the upcoming day, what are two or three successes I really want to have? And then that's what you want to visualize in the second 30 seconds, the upcoming success. Again, be as specific as possible. And what we know, whether it be with the positive self-talk or with visualization, the more specific you can be, the better, the more impactful, the more sticky it is for your brain.
Yeah, this has changed. I'm not just making this up, Jason. You know, I have a morning routine that I go through, including a mental routine. And part of it is, you know, even before I read your book, you know, there's three priorities in my life, and I sort of visualize or set my intentions for the day of how I can take some action in these three areas. And I had never thought about, you know, spending time to kind of realize and reinforce what I did in those same areas, you know, in the previous 24 hours. So I'm definitely going to add that to my routine.
And Kevin, I think it's a really good idea. And I know when I was writing my first book, 10 Minute Toughness, the mental workout in 10 Minute Toughness is much longer. It's 3 minutes and 40 seconds. And that book really was written for professional athletes and coaches. Okay, so this, I think for our audience, the 100 seconds does it. The difference being, with a professional athlete, we needed to spend 3 minutes of visualization so that we could really start to impact muscle memory. Mm-hmm. You and I and folks in the business world, we don't necessarily need the muscle memory that the professional athletes or that the athletes do. Okay, but even when I was putting that first mental workout together, I knew that 3 minutes and 40 seconds, man, that's a really long time. And I was worried that people would get bogged down with even how long that was. You know, people are overwhelmed and trying to get time from them and commit time is very difficult. So I really considered getting rid of the past success visualization. I was kind of like you. I didn't put a lot into it in my life of the past success. And so I started doing some homework and research on the impact of seeing past success. It really has, again, a tremendous impact on self-image and self-confidence, which we know, again, is the number one variable for human performance. So seeing yourself having already accomplished and done the things that cause success has a greater impact on that than imagining success. So I'd tell you, for sure, include the past success.
Yeah, that's great. And for the sake of time, I just want to summarize again in terms of the steps for this workout. It's the centering breath, then your personal identity statement, your highlight reel that you just talked about, the two 30-second, you know, pairs. Then you're repeating your identity statement, and then you're finalizing the process out with a final centering breath. I got that right?
That's exactly right.
So I think, you know, and I love it. You've mentioned everything that you're recommending that you teach athletes and executives. It's coming from, you know, psychological research. But for those who might be skeptical or just you know, anchor from emotions, can you share, you know, any success stories, you know, from your, whether executive clients or sports clients where, you know, you started working with them and they got some real success from doing this routine?
Yeah. Because of confidentiality, I don't get to really drop names, but I'll say this, the mental workout, it was the first thing I really did in the world of sports psychology. And it just so happened, one of my best friends, when I was finishing graduate school, played for the Houston Astros, and I put the mental workout together and I immediately called him. We spent a couple hours on the phone going through it, and he was going through, I think it was maybe good timing for me, bad for him. But at the time when I called him, he was really in the worst slump of his career. I think he had gone less than 3 hits for 3 weeks in a row, which that's, you know, for a Major League Baseball player, you're not going to get through that very long without getting demoted. But we go through the mental workout, and he then goes 4 weeks in a row with 10 hits or more, which you do that, you can play as long as you want. And so he started telling teammates in Major League Baseball, and then they were telling friends in the NFL and the NHL and NBA. And I'd tell you, the mental workout is what took me from a graduate student to, within 2 years, again, recognized as one of the top sports psychology consultants in the world. And there's just one reason. You know, when people pass the names around, that's nice. That's like getting an interview. But if the product doesn't work, they're not going to do it. You're not going to, you know, at this level, they're not going to give you a second chance. That's just how it works. And so I'd tell you, the mental workout is what took me from a nobody to a somebody. For one reason, it just flat out works. And I know, again, I grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It's a very blue collar town. Seems like mumbo jumbo. And you know, I look at the science and I try it. And that's all I'd encourage your listeners to do. You know, maybe pick up one of the books and get a little bit more knowledge of the mental workout so you know what you're doing. But try it for a month. Try it for a week. And I think what you're going to see, you know, it's maybe not going to be earth-shattering immediately, but you will see that it has you more prepared, more focused, more ready to attack and win each and every day. It's significant enough that you, if you try it, most people say, yeah, you know what, that's probably worth the 100 seconds I'm going to invest in this. It's probably worth the return on the investment.
Yeah, Jason, I'm glad you said that, because I was gonna recommend the same thing. Best thing to do, it's only 100 seconds. Everybody can make that time to get these kinds of results and try it for 30 days and see firsthand. So before we wrap up, I always like to challenge our listeners to become a little bit better every single day. I say 1% better every single day. So in addition to the mental workout, what else might we do today to develop our mental toughness or to explore some of this?
You know, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked. Here's where I start with anyone, whether it be a professional athlete, baseball player, football player, you know, MMA, or someone in the business world. the first fundamental, and again, this is one of those that I think sounds awfully soft and sounds a little strange. The first fundamental, you've got to start recognizing what you're doing well. You see, here's what normally happens in the human brain, especially as we age. Our brains are biologically built to focus on the negative. And unfortunately, expectancy theory, that which you focus on expands. So what happens, you go through your day today and maybe you're driving home from work. Your brain is just by the nature of itself, the biology, is going to be more likely to focus on the things you screwed up on today. And if you let your brain focus on those screw-ups, by looking at those screw-ups, you're going to create more screw-ups tomorrow because you're going to beat your self-confidence down. Now, if you can get yourself, instead of focusing on your screw-ups, and if you want to still focus on your screw-ups, that's fine. But here's what you got to do first. Just ask yourself, okay, what are two or three things that I did well today? You know, great Bear Bryant, one of the greatest football coaches to ever walk the planet, he never let his players watch video of plays they screwed up on. He only showed players plays that either they did well or that their teammates did well that they maybe needed to make the improvement of. But he wouldn't let them watch the negative for this exact reason. And again, it's total science. You cannot intelligently argue against this at this point in time. So what I tell you is just take a 30 seconds, 60 seconds at most, and get in the habit, and it's nine times more impactful if you write it down. But think it, or you know, if you want to speed it up, write it down, two or three things you did well before you go to the critical side. Always start with the positive in terms of evaluation.
Love it. Jason, thanks again for coming on the LeadX show. And tell our listeners how they can find out more about you, your work, and your books.
I think the easiest way is just my website, jasonself.com. All the books are there, and we've got, you know, different podcasts, and I think you can get some free information. I think there's even a video about the mental workout on there, but we try to give as much as we can away. We've been really fortunate in our career so that we're not trying to nickel and dime people for information. We're just trying to help.
Love it. All right, friends, you've just been mentored by Dr. Jason Selk. Don't forget, you can get the links and notes from this interview over at leadx.org, and you can get Jason's books over at amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. And while that's it for today's episode of the LeadX Show, don't forget to download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, over at leadx.org/Branson. Totally free ebook only at leadx.org/Branson. Until next time, remember, leadership is not a choice because leadership isn't about authority, it's about influence. And you influence people with both your words and your silence, your actions and inaction. We are all leaders. Lead with intent.